Welcome to Awkwardish, where we talk about those awkward topics dealing with mental health, substance abuse, domestic violence, and everything in between. Today, we will be discussing suicide prevention awareness. And coincidentally, today is World Suicide Prevention Day. So just to touch on a few things about that, every year, over 700,000 people worldwide die by suicide, and for every completed suicide, there are many more attempts. But Tony and I will be sharing our stories since we both have attempted in the past, and Tony will be starting.
Hey y'all, my name's Tony. I'm here and I'll tell you my story. But first, I'd like to start off with like resources for suicide prevention. One of them is 988lifeline.org and also the 988 number. That is nationwide for North America, for the U.S.
You can call or text that number.
And then there's also on.
And your phone does not need service.
Yes.
Your phone, yeah, I found that out last year. The phone you use does not have to have service.
So my struggles with depression and I go way back since I was 12 or 13, but it didn't become like serious until in like my mid-20s and mid-20s. I had a lot going on, like battling substance abuse, still dealing with that depression that I've had since I was a kid. And then it turns out it was more than depression. I had an undiagnosed condition for a long time. And it was just a series and chain of events and a series of attempts to the one that was in 2015, which is the one I'll talk about. So what led up to that one was a whole series of loss and the end of a seven-year relationship. I found out my ex-partner had lost our baby. My father was accusing me of using when I was not. And then that really triggered a fight between us, and like a physical fight. And that triggered a manic episode, which I didn't know it was a manic episode until after that I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder type 1, which is more on the manic side, and followed by crippling depression. So in that manic episode, I made a rash decision, which led up to me taking 30 sedative psychiatric pills that I was already on, and I took a huge quantity, and I was in a coma for about 6 days, barely made it out. And you know, it was just like, it was a quick decision, and I ate those pills, and then I collapsed. And if it wasn't for them getting me to the hospital, I don't think I would have made it. Because it all happened so quickly. Because I remember taking the pills, and within 5 to 10 minutes, I was collapsed on the ground, and the ambulance was coming. I could hear them. And, you know, I got sent to Kaiser to recover for that. I woke up from the 5-day coma and, you know, just hooked up to a catheter and was freaking out. Didn't know where I was. I could barely, to get a thought together. And it was just a surreal event because for those couple of weeks that I was sent to recover there, I had to have a sitter since I tried to run away because somebody told me I was going to Napa, Napa State, or St. Helena, the psychiatric hospital, which I didn't want to go to. So that's what triggered me code graying out of there. Code gray is when you try to run from a hospital when you're a patient there, you know, leaving without authority, basically. And then I have to have a sitter. And after that, I was sent to John Muir Psychiatric Hospital. I was there for like 2 months and then sent to a recovery facility for mental health crisis called the Hope House in Martinez, California. And it was a good, both places were really good for me. They were really good experiences because I got to be around people and had to process groups and really talk about what was going on, right? Because I hadn't had that, I hadn't had reached out to anybody about what was going on internally, and which was what led up to the suicide event and what caused a lot of grief, right? So yeah, I'm glad that I made it through and that the attempt wasn't successful, but that I'm sad to say that that wasn't the last one. I had a couple more after that one. But that's the one I'll talk for now, so I'll let Ruby share her story.
Hey guys, it's Ruby. Usually, this is where we would put an ad, but we don't have any sponsors at the moment. So, if you're interested in having us read an ad for your business, send me an email to ruby@awkwardrube.com. Thanks. Bye, guys. All right. One thing that I did forget to say before is that we're sharing our stories because we want to, one, break the stigma of speaking about suicide, and two, for anyone who's contemplating it or dealing with the aftermath of someone who has completed suicide or anything like that, we want you to know that you're not alone, that there are other people who have gone through this or who are going through this, and it's okay to talk about it.
Yes.
So I'm going to take that and run with it, because this is actually my first time talking about, this is my first time telling my stories of my attempts. And it's crazy to think about that, because I'm so open about most other mental health things, but I don't really talk about when I had postpartum depression, which I had after having my second daughter. I was 22, and I had severe postpartum depression. I attempted 3 times in 3 weeks in December of 2006. I had just given birth, and I also had a 1.5-year-old, and I was in an abusive marriage. So I had my husband telling me all these horrible things about myself, and then I had my brain telling me all these horrible things about myself. My brain was taking every little tiny mistake that I had made during my small period of motherhood and spinning it into some type of catastrophe. So I convinced myself that my family would be better off without me. Of those 3 attempts, only one of them is really clear in my mind. I remember I wrote a very heartfelt letter. I put on my nicest outfit that I could find. I'm pretty sure I even did my hair. And I counted out 88 pills. I don't remember what they were, but I remember there were 88. Put them in little groups. And then I was about to eat the first group. I had my jug of water, and my then husband came to the door. He opened the door and he goes, "What are you doing?" And I looked at him like like he was stupid. And I said, "Well, I'm about to solve all your problems." And he like flew across the room and he slapped the pills out of my hand. He grabbed them all. He flushed them down the toilet, but he was calling me every name in the book. So it's not like he was hoping. So after that, I'm not sure that was the last attempt, but I think that may have been the second one. It may have been the last one. But I remember I began researching postpartum depression online. I connected with some people in support groups, people who had lost people to suicide when they were going through postpartum depression. And I met this really wonderful woman. She had lost her daughter. Her daughter had died by suicide when she was going through postpartum depression. And she reached out to me every day. She called me. She encouraged me to get help. She sent me, what are they called? Those cards, affirmation cards in the mail. My then husband was totally against me getting mental health help. So my mom and I had to make up a story that we were taking the baby to the doctor in order for me to go to the mental health clinic. But I finally did get help, and I did stop trying to kill myself, at least for that time. My fourth attempt was almost 3 years later, and I was definitely deep into my addiction. I had just lost my apartment. I had been evicted. I didn't know how to live without substances every day. I was bitchy, you know, basically. I was starting picking arguments with everyone. I had a bad attitude, and I was staying at my mom's house, so she wasn't going to put up with that. And I remember we got into an argument. She was yelling at me, and something inside me just kind of like broke, because I was ruminating on these bad thoughts about myself already, which is why I was turning it all outward. I just reached into my bag and grabbed a bottle of, I think it may have been Wellbutrin or something, and it was full, and I just took them off right in front of everyone in the living room, and all hell broke loose. And I remember my mom calling 911, and my sisters were screaming, and I'm just thinking, you know, everywhere I go, there's chaos. So if they get rid of me, there's no more chaos. I thought if I was gone, there'd be no more chaos. So I couldn't understand why everyone was upset. And I remember at one point I closed my eyes, and my sister Kiki, she screamed my name in a way that I had never heard her scream before. So anyway, the ambulance comes, they take me to Martina's, they gave me charcoal to drink, they kept me for less than 12 hours, put me in a cab, sent me home. No medication, no follow-up appointment. And when I called to get a follow-up appointment, it was 3 months out. And I thought, what do I have to do to get some help in this county? This was 2009. I felt so helpless. And it absolutely sent me further into my addiction, because I felt like there was no help for me. Like, everything changed when Obamacare went into effect. When that went into effect, medication and psychiatric help was so much more readily available. Like, thank God for that. Thank God for the psychiatrists and therapists that I have now. So yeah, those are my stories that I have never told anyone.
Thank you for sharing. I know it's not easy. I'll talk about one more, and that was when, after finding out I was bipolar and everything, my addiction came back full force. I had relapsed, and I was just at a low point, and my family didn't know what to do, so they called the police, right? They called the ambulance, and the police showed up first, and I wanted to suicide by cop. One of the cops was on the verge of actually drawing his service pistol, but the other one was restrained for, and they just I remember they tackled me, and I was sent to psychiatric emergencies yet again. But in that time, I spent some more time in where I needed to get help, and they actually suggested I go to rehab and do like a couple other things, which I did, and that helped for a while. But it's like it didn't stick until now. I'm at such a better place in my life than I have been in a long time. It's because my medication's dialed in, right? Because I was having rapid cycling bipolar events, which means you go from being manic to being down rather quickly, and that had never happened before, right? I was in a mental health facility for like about a year, 2 years ago, and now, having gone through that, I never want to go back. But I know that it's there to help rather than to hurt. It does get better, so hang in there. If you start to feel suicidal or plan it, best to talk to someone before you actually act on it. Or if you do know someone that has completed it and you're going through it, like Ruby said, there is someone to talk to always.
Yes, like Tony said, 988, that's the national number for the crisis line. You can call it, you can text it. Like I said, you don't even need to have service on the phone. It's just like 911. You can call it from any phone. And they're there 24 hours a day, and they can help you. They can give you resources. They can listen to you. They are a lifeline. I mean, I used them last year when I was going through a really bad time after my dad died, and they were amazing. And they referred me to people who could give me grief counseling, and that turned my life around. So yeah, if you need help, just please ask for it. You don't have to go through it alone.
I'll be done.
I think that's all for our episode today. Unless you have anything to add, Tony?
No, I think it was a pretty heavy episode, but it was one that I was glad to talk about. If my experience helps out anyone, I'm glad to have shared it.
Same, definitely. So yeah, we will be back with the next episode of Awkwardish.
Bye.
Bye.